warning. The Catholic Man Show contains high levels of manliness. If you think you may be too weak to withstand the manliness represented in the following program, please do yourself a favor and stop listening now. If you choose to continue in spite of this warning, if at any time you feel yourself overcome by the manliness, stop immediately and consult your closest medical professional. And now, for the not so fair, faint, or frilly, we present The Catholic Man Show.
Welcome to the Catholic Man Show. We're on the Lord's team, the winning side, so raise your glass. I'm Adam Minahan, sitting here with David Niles. And Dave, I feel like that there's just a part of you that's missing today. I feel like that you're just not all there. Are you okay?
You know, your senses have not dulled with age.
Thank goodness.
Yeah.
Hope that track continues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'm beardless.
You are beardless.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. However.
However.
There is a however to the beard being gone. It has been supplemented by the stash.
Yeah, it is sustained.
Sustained. Yeah, probably sustained better than supplemented.
Not supplemented, yeah.
Yeah.
The mustache.
The stash.
I'm trying to bring it back.
Dude, you of all people.
It's not really left. You know, like there's still plenty of baby boomers out there rocking the stash.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. More than I realized now, having had one for 3 days.
People look at you now.
People do. But also, you know, like when you get a new car, all of a sudden you notice how many of that car there is driving around.
Right.
All of a sudden you get a mustache and all, you're like, hey, you got a stash. You got a, you know, there's... They're out there.
They're, you know, between like 57 and 70.
Yeah, not very many are our age. You know who did have one was the guy in the play we went to.
Yes. The Prince and the Pauper.
Who is the sword fighting guy.
Yeah.
I think he was like 19.
Yeah. I mean, he had a good stash. Better than mine, probably.
We should mention, let's just give a shout out to Ken Henderson and
That's
the
good idea.
All the Classical Catholic Drama Club here in Tulsa. They put on The Prince and the Pauper at a local community playhouse.
Mark Twain story? Is that what?
Yeah.
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 It's by Mark Twain.
Yeah. And it was absolutely phenomenal. It was so delightful.
Yeah, like, it was a lot of fun.
It was funny.
I took my wife out.
Me too.
We did it the same night. We didn't realize it.
But yeah.
It was really funny. I left my kids with my grandparents to go see other kids that night.
Much older kids, though.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, but they did so awesome. They had these accents that were just brilliant.
They did a great job.
I wanted to go see it again the next day.
Yeah, it was a really good play. It was a really good play. So great job, Ken.
Way to go.
Also, this Mother's Day is coming up. And if you're like me, and a lot of times you don't know what to get your mom, spoil it. My mom, I don't think my mom listens to the show, so I'm going to spoiler alert if she does.
I have no idea if my mom does. I know my dad does.
Well... I'm getting my mom a Viaggi candle for Mother's Day. Viaggi candle, they sponsor us. And if you go to their website, viaggicandles.com, and type in the promo code CHEERS, you get 20% off and $5 comes to us. So make sure you use the promo code to let them know that we sent you. Your mom will thank you this Mother's Day. Go check them out. Viaggi candles. And that amazing sound that you just heard from Dave is a popped bottle.
That's right. I opened the beer.
Yes.
Mine. I opened my beer.
If this is your first time listening to the Catholic Man Show, we actually got a couple of new listeners that reached out to us, at least, this week. So if this is your first time listening to the Catholic Man Show, the first thing we do is open, review, and enjoy a man beverage. We highlight a man gear, and then we have a manly discussion. We also, dude, we also got another Australian in the Council of Man this week.
Good eye.
Yes. I mean, I think there's three now. I think we have three from Australia.
I knew I liked that place.
I can't wait to go there. I've guys, never been. Guys, I've listen. Never been. So I know that there's some.
My wife's been. She went for youth day.
Man, that's awesome.
She just gets to do all the cool stuff.
I know.
In her life.
Well, listen. I know there's Australians that are listening right now. It is time to pull together and have a Catholic Man show live in Australia. Make it happen. Let's do this. Because I really want to go.
I think for 4,000, no. I think for 6,000, we should be able to pull this off.
Yeah. So anyway, Dave, why don't you introduce the beer?
Okay, so we are drinking a beer that was brewed by none other than the famous Father Brian Ketterer.
Yes.
So this beer was part of I think they did two beers. They brewed some beer for their Newman Center fundraiser. So Father Brian Ketterer, he is the chaplain's not the right word. He's not the pastor because of the place.
He's the chaplain.
Well, you can say that, but there's an official word for what he is.
Okay.
And maybe it'll come to me later. Anyway, because they're not a parish, he's not a pastor, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, he's the priest of the T.U. Newman Center.
He's been on our show several times.
Yeah. You guys know him.
Right.
But phenomenal beerist.
Priest.
Yeah. Beersmith. He's a beersmith.
Yes, I like that.
Uh-huh. So anyway, he brewed this one. I don't remember what the other one is. This is a wit beer.
It's a whit.
And beyond that, I haven't tried it yet, but I believe that means it's a wheat beer. But
what was the name of it again?
Outwit the devil.
Outwit the devil.
Why am I saying what? What way? That's also from Hot Rod. Dude, you need to see that movie.
Okay.
No, Dave.
I'm the party guy.
I'm the party guy. I know for a fact you do not party.
Let's cheers. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
Cheers to Jesus.
Cheers.
So it looks a lot like Blue Moon. He's told me that when he gave it to me, he said he was really surprised how much it's actually cleared up. I think, you know, we just poured it again, so it probably stirred up, you know, the sediments and stuff in it. Because it looks, you know, fairly murky, about what you'd expect. He did tell me that it goes excellent with a lemon or an orange. We did not have oranges, so we have lemons. And
yes. So I tried it without the lemon, and now I'll try it with.
Yeah. So what are your thoughts? I still haven't tried it.
It's a really good beer. It's his Easter beer. Did you mention that?
Oh, yeah. No, I didn't. It is an Easter beer. So the fundraiser, Newman Center fundraiser, coincided very closely with Easter. So it was an Easter beer, I guess.
Well, yeah, I think it's tradition for the Newman Center
to brew a beer for Easter. Yes, you're correct. I believe that is correct.
Yeah, the story's not coming.
Look, the beer's in front of me, and it's in my cup. What else do I need to know?
Yeah,
you know,
I get it. No, it's a really good beer. It's a nice summertime beer.
Totally, and it was hot,
refreshing.
Today.
Refreshing. It was, man. It was like 90 degrees, hot. 85 degrees. So
I rebuilt a fence yesterday.
I laid two tractor loads of mulch in my yard yesterday. It was a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so thank you, Father Brian, for this.
Just anywhere? You just like spread it out?
Yeah, I thought it would be just cover the whole yard.
Forget grass.
Yeah, let's just mulch the yard. So, no, in my flower beds and around my trees.
Very Arizonian of you.
Yeah, they do that.
I think they use rocks, but I think mulch would be better. I would prefer to play in mulch than rocks. I get it. You got to do what you got to do. Like,
right.
I just wouldn't like having a yard of rock. You can't, you know, it's like not much you can't really play in it. You know what I mean?
Oh, dude, my young boys would love it.
Yeah, they would actually.
So, but
I'm thinking
have big
more
old
of
holes.
like maybe harder playing, like
right.
football or
right.
chase.
It may be a good idea also to let people know why we drink on air. Because we haven't done that in a while.
Great idea. Why don't you do it?
Okay. So, Dave and I, when we first started this show, it came from a men's group that we were a part of, where we opened a beer and then talked theology. And because we enjoyed drinking, we thought, hey, we could do this while promoting moderation. It's one thing to talk about moderation, another thing to promote it. And so it's a two-sided coin where we get to promote moderation and yet still enjoy some of the finer things in life.
It's delicious moderation promotion.
Yes. Which is sometimes a beer, sometimes a whiskey.
Sometimes other things.
So it really depends on what the listeners a lot of times send us.
Yes. Actually, that's a lot of it.
Yeah. So a lot of times we get a whiskey that somebody likes and wants us to try it, or a beer or something like that, and ships it to us, and we're able to try it. So
that was a revelation for me. And guys, I'll pass this knowledge on to you. If you can start a show, a Catholic show, where you drink and you can get other people to listen to that show, people will start sending you free drinks.
They do it with Matt Frad and his Pints with Aquinas.
Yeah, he does too. Well, I mean, he drinks on the air. He drinks while he records.
Mm-hmm.
It just will show up in the mail. It's almost magic.
It's a beautiful thing is what it is.
Yeah. Not the pagan kind of magic. I mean, more of like the fairy tale, kind of like mysterious, like beauty.
Awe.
Yeah. Like an look at this.
Awe-inspiring moment.
This is a bottle of whiskey. It just magically showed up with a note from some gentleman in the world.
So anyway, that's what we do on the first segment of the Catholic Man Show.
Yeah. I find drinking good. I look at it, especially
this beer.
And I see that it is good.
That sounds familiar.
Yeah.
I don't know where I heard that before.
Yeah, I wrote it.
That's what I figured. Hang in there. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles, here with Adam Minahan. We're in studio today. We have taken steps. We're going to make it happen, guys. We will be bringing video to the Catholic Man Show.
We're going to do it.
Yep.
We
bought hardware. It's on its way.
So that's exciting. I'm excited about it. I think I'm excited. Like, but then I also think, like, I can't come.
You wouldn't be able to be dressed like a slob like you are right now.
Yeah. So
you, like,
I'm not dressed as a slob, but
no, but it's you're like not
workout attire,
not dressed as a slob either.
It's workout attire.
What do you think? What in your mind dressed as a slob is what?
Like really baggy clothes that are untucked and probably wrinkly and just ununiformed.
Okay. So it could be like a dress shirt.
Sure.
That could still be slobby.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Different interpretations, I suppose.
That's happened before in the whole realm of history.
All right. So today, our topic is the Ascension.
Yes.
Because this is coming out, this episode is airing on the Feast of the Ascension. And so I thought a good man gear for today would be binoculars. So that's today's man gear.
What do you think? Okay, so
I just really think the apostles could have
really used really, a pair.
They would have really appreciated having some binoculars in that moment as they're sitting there staring at the clouds, watching Jesus turn into the small speck in the distance. They're still trying to like hold on to him, you know?
Or did he like just get up, you know, 40, 50 feet and poof?
I don't know. I wasn't there.
I wasn't either.
My impression from reading the account is that it like, he was getting smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller into the distance. That's it. That's just, you know, what I think.
I think that's a private interpretation.
Sure. Sure. I don't think Pope Francis has made any rulings on
that yet.
You know, on exactly what went down.
I don't think so.
Or any of his predecessors for that matter. But anyway, binoculars come in really, 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 really handy. I think there's some situations where you really need binoculars. Hunting is one of them.
Yes.
Because you can, you know, you if you're hunting, you probably have a scope on your rifle.
Mm-hmm.
You can use it as a monocle.
Yes.
To essentially do the same thing. But sometimes that's just not kosher. Because sometimes, depending on where you are, what the situation is, you might be hunting on public land. And so you're trying to look to see, like, is that a person? Okay. And even though you're you know, you might have unloaded the firearm, you know, you're using safe gun practices, it's just not cool to look at a person
with a gun
with your scope. You know yeah. what I'm saying? Like, and a lot of
people think about that.
A lot of people will do that because, you know, that's what are you going to do?
Right.
You know, you have to see down range or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So a good pair of binoculars is really the better, or even option. Even they make those monocle zoom in things.
That's really good, dude.
It's like a
words are hard.
I know. It's a
words are
monocular.
Hard. A monocular.
A monocle.
Monocle.
Yeah. But you know, you just look through.
Are the monocles actually, you know, the eyeglass piece?
That's a monocle. A monocle is just like a one.
Are those going to come back in, like,
no.
It's been a while.
No, you know why?
Because glasses.
Contacts.
And contacts.
Yeah. It's like a contact is.
I hope the top hat comes back around someday.
Maybe.
It's time. The rotation has, the life cycle has come back around.
Yes, the top hat's like, I don't know if it serves any practical purpose, really. It's a,
just a formal simply a, hat.
Yeah, it's like a cultural development of flourishing.
Anyway,
and plenty.
We're not talking
yeah.
about top hats. I'm sorry. I got you.
Something else will come back that's like it.
Yeah.
So the binocular.
Yes.
Came out very, very quickly after the telescope was invented.
They realized we could do this. Okay.
Yeah. So telescope shows up in like the 16th century.
Mm-hmm.
Very primitive forms of telescope. And then guy by the name of Galileo.
Hmm. Never heard of him.
Yeah. He's a big dude.
He's in stature?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Well, I don't know, actually. But he invented the other kind of telescope. I don't really know what the first kinds were, but he invented the kind that uses a mirror and a glass lens, and could amplify stuff about 40 times, but had a very, 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 very narrow field of vision.
Okay.
And so someone very, very quickly said, well, what if you took two of them and looked through two at the same time?
Mm-hmm.
And so someone, like, the very beginning of the 17th century, I think it was like 1608, filed the first patent for the binoculars, where basically he just took two telescopes in a box.
Mm-hmm. And comboed it up.
It didn't catch on because it was very cumbersome to use, you know?
Probably heavy.
Very heavy, yeah. You still couldn't pick them up.
Right.
So they were... So it's like the same as a telescope.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it didn't have any added benefit.
Practical uses.
Unless you were looking at... Certainly not for looking at the stars,
mm-hmm.
Because the telescope does not give you a three-dimensional image in your brain because you're only using one eye. Now, the binoculars will, but it doesn't really matter when you're looking at something as far away as the moon, for instance. So if you're using it bird watching or hunting, you know, and you're just looking several hundred yards away, having a three-dimensional image does give you some benefit in seeing what you're looking at, but these binoculars weren't good for that because you still had to mount them and,
mm-hmm.
you know.
You know what it reminds me, like when I think of binoculars, you know what I think of?
Hmm.
And this is probably like, most people would not think of this, but when I think of binoculars, I think of the dad and his young son going to a baseball game or a football game.
Yeah.
And, you know, the dad has the binoculars and, like, he's holding them, you know, and focusing them in. Here's where you want to go. And then he hands them to the little kids. So that way he can see the baseball player or the football player or whatever it is and zooms in. And, you know what? The reason why I think, like, I'm just kind of realizing this, but the reason why that's not a thing anymore is because of the huge jumbotrons they have these days. The idea of having binoculars at a football game anymore is like, why do I need binoculars when I have this massive jumbotron that has everything that I need to see right over here?
Yeah. Or I have my phone and I'm live streaming the television coverage on my phone.
Right.
That's why I come to the games.
But that's kind of a bummer, I think, because that's what I think of. Like, it's just like kind of part of like the atmosphere, the ambiance of the football game or the baseball game with your son. And I don't know, that happened with me, my dad and my grandpa, like, you know, I don't know. I like that.
Mm-hmm. The older I get, the more curmudgeon-y I get about technology. I think this is something you have sensed in me as of late. I have just been getting more and more anti-technology, and I feel old.
When you
like that makes me feel old with the fact when I like.
I feel like the mustache is going to be a catalyst of this projection.
But it's true that anytime you replace something, introduce technology into a process, it becomes less satisfying. You know, like if you go out and chop a bunch of wood, at the end, you feel really good. Like, I just chopped all this wood. Great. If you use a log splitter, you're going to be done really fast. And it's just going to be like, all right, I finished. You know, you don't feel good about doing it. It was just, it's done. Okay. It's very efficient. You know, it's the Jumbotron. Like, wow. Okay. Look how well we can see. Look how well we can split logs. But there's something lost every time with technology. And I'm not anti-technology. It's just I feel like we should really be more discerning with our use of it. Jumbotrons aren't bad, but you know, like
they're pretty sweet for instant replays.
Yeah, yeah, oh yeah, totally. But we should just, I think, really consider not with Jumbotrons, but just with all technology. Really, is this going to be good or not? You know, what are the costs? That's one thing we just don't ever consider. What are the costs for technology?
Mm-hmm.
Binoculars.
Okay.
I recently won a pair of binoculars.
Nice.
They are not nice binoculars. They are medium.
Okay.
They're not cheap binoculars. Okay. It was at a scramble tournament.
Nice.
It was dark, and we were hitting glow-in-the-dark golf balls.
Interesting.
About 120 yards at the driving range, they had put like these glow-in-the-dark flags. It was basically a really, really, really big hula hoop, like maybe a 10-foot-wide hula hoop diameter.
Mm-hmm.
And I was the only one who hit it in the hula hoop.
Nice. Yeah,
so they put it around one of the flags out there. And it was like sort of one of those Seinfeld moments with George, who's in this, like, you know, you say one good joke right off the bat, and you're like, all right, I'm out.
Right, yeah. I do know with binoculars that they rate them, like, with a number by a number. You know, it's like 7 by 30, or what, there's numbers. And the first number is the magnification, like how many times over, like 7 times the magnification, 10 times the magnification. And the second number is for the diameter of the aperture.
Okay, that's good to know. So how narrow your field of vision is or whatever. Yeah,
correct. And I do know that they say that like $100 pair of binoculars and a $200 pair, the $200 pair is going to be about 50% better. But then it gets to a plateau about the $500 to $750 range.
Yeah.
I mean, there's more expensive ones, but it decreases as it goes.
Yeah, I'd have a tough time paying $500 for binoculars.
Me too, man. Me too.
I'd have a tough time paying $200.
Me too. We're going to talk about the Ascension when we get back. More on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass. Over the weekend, I decided that I was able to tell something about any man by asking one question.
Ooh, ask me. What's the question?
The question is, and I can get a sense of whether or not I can trust you or not.
I'm excited about this.
Here's the question. Do you think Dave Matthews Band is a good band?
And I would say, Yes.
Then I would feel like, okay, I can probably trust you.
Yeah. We used to be huge Dave Matthews. I mean, like, I used to know every single Dave Matthews song.
Mm-hmm.
Deep tracks only, you know?
Not Ants Marching. Stop playing. Right.
Yeah. I like
that. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do.
Yeah, or Crash. I mean, it's like, yeah. I love Crash. If you ever hear a Dave Matthews song on the radio, it's going to be Crash.
Yeah.
But I used to feel like if you don't like Dave Matthews music, you don't like music. That's just what it is. You're just not a music person, okay?
And I get it. I mean, there's other... I mean,
that's fine. Sports, I'm not art. Judging you. Right. You just don't like music.
Right. So I apologize, but
I mean,
I can't trust you if you don't like...
I feel sad for you that you don't like music.
Yeah.
And I know that because you don't like Dave Matthews.
Although I got to tell you, some of his new stuff, I'm like, blah. Like, it's not... I think after, like, Under the Table and Dreaming or so, after that CD, I'm
not... Yeah, also, mentally, I feel like I'm in a different place now.
That's true.
You know, you kind of have to, like, have the abstract, like, whimsical, I don't know if that's a good word to use, but, you know, it's like you have to kind of be in the frame of Dave, mind the, Dave the frame.
Jam band mode.
Right, yeah. But he does have some really good songs.
Okay, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to make that the first segment. Yeah. Go ahead.
But that's your one question, huh?
That would be the
one. That's not what I expected, actually.
I know that.
I know. I have also developed a test.
Okay.
As I've gotten older, my view, you know, my opinion of what old is has changed.
Naturally.
I used to look at 30-year-olds and be like, oh, that's pretty old.
Right.
Now, it's like, but at some point, you do become old. Okay. Mm-hmm. What is that point? This is the test. Can you jump?
That's a good, yeah.
If you can get both feet off the ground, it doesn't matter how much. If you can get both off the ground, even a little bit, you're not old. If you are tethered to the earth, you are old. With obviously some exceptions. If you're in a wheelchair, obviously it doesn't apply to you.
Right.
All other stuff too. But in general.
Right.
If you can't jump, you're old. All right. Then we've got a bunch of guys out there jumping.
Yeah.
Going like...
Or turning it off. They're like, these guys are just rambling.
Well, maybe. I think there are people out there jumping right now going, hey, honey, I'm not old. Way to go, man.
All right. Ascension.
Okay. So we're talking about the ascension.
Yeah.
I was really excited to talk about this today because in my mind, the ascension was cool. It was like a really awesome thing that happened. You know, Jesus is like... Yo, I'm God, I'm out. But that's all it was that like...
You think that's what he said?
Basically.
Paraphrasing, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's...
Yo, I'm God, I'm out.
Yeah.
Okay.
Totally. And I didn't really think that there was much spiritual significance. You know, it's kind of like he died, suffered, and rose from the dead. Boom. That's the significance. And then he had to like hang out for 40 days just to make sure that
everybody knew.
The apostles like, all right, you know, I got to make sure we're clear on what happened, what went down. I died, I'm back. This is what it means. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then he's like, all right, now that we're clear, I'm, you know, going to leave you guys to it. And that was basically the ascension.
Mm-hmm.
That's not it.
No.
The ascension is very spiritually significant for us. And so, that's why I was so excited to talk about it, because I think there's maybe a lot of guys out there who are unaware
or haven't even thought about it.
Yeah. So, this is from the Catechism of Trent, Catechism of the Council of Trent.
Okay.
And this is in reference to the ascension because, you know, he ascended to the Father and is now our advocate.
Correct.
Jesus is the mediator. Thank you.
You're welcome.
There is indeed nothing from whence the faithful ought derive greater joy. This is a big statement. Mm-hmm. Council of Trent. That nothing should give you more joy and delight from the fact that Jesus Christ is constituted the advocate of our cause and the intercessor of our salvation with the eternal Father. Nothing should bring you more joy. And it's like, wow, okay, if there's a feast for us to be celebrating, this has got to be...
This is one of them.
I mean, Easter is the biggest.
Naturally.
Let's not get anything confused, but I think it's awesome that this feast is in the Easter season, mm-hmm. you know, because it's still Easter.
Right.
And so let's turn to Thomas Aquinas.
Yes. I was hoping you were going to do that.
Good move, right?
Yeah. Checkmate.
He has a question on whether the ascension is the cause of our salvation. And spoiler alert, he says yes.
That's okay? The cause.
The cause. He's not saying like it's the reason we're saved, but it's like the efficient cause of our salvation. And I don't think he means it's the only cause of our salvation. But he says that it is the cause of our salvation in two ways, on our part and on Jesus's part.
Okay.
So on our part, insofar as that it lifts our souls up to him, it is a cause of our salvation. The ascension fosters faith, hope, and charity, which I think that's a really important part, that the fact that it's not so much that just he went up and as he was lifted high.
So the ascension fosters
faith, hope, and charity. It was the fact
theological that, virtues.
Yeah, the fact that he was gone. Okay, he's not physically here with us anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so now all of
us... Well, that makes sense because in heaven, you don't have faith any longer or hope any longer, the theological virtues.
Right, so...
You have obviously charity, but...
For the apostles, when he's sitting there hanging out with them,
mm-hmm.
their faith was very weak. They didn't need it. Here's Jesus before them.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Or maybe not weak, but it just didn't need, you didn't need much from faith. You know what I'm saying? Because it's right here before you. That's why in heaven.
When they were tested, they still failed at times.
Right. Oh, sure. Yeah. Yeah. But that's why in heaven there's no faith, because it's like.
You're in front of
there's
it.
No, and there's no hope.
Because you're already there.
There's nothing to hope for. You have it.
Yeah.
You know? And so the ascension, the departure of Jesus, fosters these three very important virtues, faith, hope, and charity. And so in that way, it is a cause of our salvation, because anything that is fostering the theological virtues is in and of itself or in its own way a cause of our salvation. And then finally, it increases our reverence for him, because we no longer view Jesus as simply an earthly man. You know, his time here on earth, it's like kind of highlights his human nature,
mm-hmm.
and then the ascension highlights his divinity. And so that's
also like the whole rising from the dead would highlight his divinity.
Totally,
that would be part of the.
That would be a big one for me.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Also, like the loaves and fishes is also another pretty big one. That's an amazing magic trick where this guy's divine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's why people were following him around.
Right, yeah.
Because I kind of get the impression that he was doing that over and over and over again.
Well, we won't, yeah.
I mean, he says something to them later, like, do you believe because, you know, because I fed you, or because, you know, you really believe?
Mm-hmm.
You're just trying to get fed some more? Is that it? Anyway, so that's the why it's a cause on our part, on his part.
On Jesus's part.
Jesus's part is that he prepared the way for our ascent into heaven. So, you know, we're called to imitate Christ in all things. So the ascension is like this broadcast saying, hey guys, this is your destiny. You know, that mm-hmm. we would do as he does. The body of Christ would do as the head. And so whatever the head of the body does, so does the body.
Mm.
And so if the head ascends, so must we. And so this is our destiny. So it's very, very important. It's like a big signal for us as Christians that, you know, this is what we're called to do. This is what we are going to do if we remain in him, and he will remain in us.
Mm-hmm.
Also, there's this Jewish idea in weddings that, if you recall, when the angel Gabriel appeared to Mary, she was betrothed, but didn't live with Joseph yet. So when a man and woman would get married in these days, the husband, the bridegroom, would leave and go prepare a place for them. So he would go like build a house for them to go live together.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus on the cross, that was his wedding, okay? He is the bride. That's where he is really fulfilled in the archetype of the bridegroom in the gospel. So here he is at his wedding, and then he leaves to go prepare a place for us, his bride.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Okay. So that's just like very, very important, I think. There's so much in Jewish culture that when you understand these traditions that they had around just their everyday life,
mm-hmm.
it brings to life so much of the gospel. It's like, no wonder the Jews were converting in droves.
Right. That's why I think Jesus and the Jewish Roots of the Eucharist is should be a must read for every RCIA student.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Or anybody.
Yeah. Yeah,
absolutely. If you're not Catholic, read it. If you are Catholic, read it.
Yeah. That's a good, yeah. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
To the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles here with Adam Minahan. We're talking about the Ascension, which is today. It's today. Right before the break there, we were talking about a book. It's just as a review. It's Jesus and the Jewish Roots of the Eucharist. It's by a guy named Brant Petrie.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Brant Petrie.
And if you don't know that guy, man, you really do need to look him up because he's
a Scott Hahn protege.
Right, yeah.
If that says anything.
He will blow your mind.
Yeah.
Okay, be warned. So we're talking about Jesus, bridegroom, mm-hmm. going to prepare a place for us. This is also from the Catechism of the Council of Trent.
Okay.
Apparently it was a really good catechism.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe we should also check that out. Finally, by his ascension, he prepared a place for us, as he had promised, and entered as our head, in the name of us all, into the possession of heavenly glory.
Hmm.
So, this is an old idea,
mm-hmm.
like a lot of the ideas in the church. They've been around from the very, very, very beginning. Another thing about why the ascension is the cause of... They're still talking about that. This is all from Thomas Aquinas, really, so far. The ascension being the cause of our salvation on his part is, as the high priest under the Old Testament entered the holy place to stand before God for the people, so also Christ entered heaven to make intercession for us.
Hmm.
Because, and this is one of his reasons that Thomas Aquinas gives, because the very showing of himself in human nature which he took with him into heaven, is a pleading for us. Just the very presenting himself, you know, in his human nature. So that for that very reason, that God so exalted human nature in Christ, he may take pity on them for whom the Son of God took human nature. So, I mean, I think that's like something that you could think about for a very, mm-hmm. very long time. I mean, just the fact that, oh, look, here's God, who now possesses human nature. What does that mean for us? And that's also, you know, part of the incarnation, maybe more than the ascension, but now he has taken that human nature with him to heaven.
To heaven.
Yeah.
You know what I've thought about before is our Mother Mary, and maybe in the month of Mary,
mm-hmm.
You know, our Mother Mary and Jesus were so close, being mother and son, and I mean, yeah. you know, her raising him all throughout, and you know, she just gets through the suffering and death of her son,
mm-hmm.
which we were told pierced her heart.
Yeah,
you know, and so she just gets through that. Then she gets this crazy joy, I'm sure, of seeing him alive again,
mm-hmm.
resurrected, and gets to hang out with him for another 40 days. And I'm sure, I'd be willing to bet that she hung out with him as much as was in God's plan, you know, sure. as much as she possibly could.
Yeah. And I think hanging out might be like
right.
underdoing it a little, you know.
Right.
I don't think they it's like she's so intimate that he's always like present.
Right.
Not to mention the fact that his blood was literally in her veins.
Right. I get it. You knew what I meant though.
Yeah, yeah. I do.
But then here she is, knowing, you know, full well who her son is, obviously.
Yeah.
And she loses him, quote unquote, again, as he goes into the ascension.
Mm-hmm.
Not real in reality, but I mean, in a physical way, she no longer is with him.
Yeah.
And how much of a pain and suffering that had to be,
mm-hmm.
because her love was so intense for Jesus.
Yeah.
You know, imagine, you know, with if, you know, when our spouses die or you know, or somebody that you love a lot, when they die, there's a lot of suffering, you know, sorrow, mm-hmm. and how much she probably had when he ascended.
Yeah, I've thought about that as well. I think tradition says that Mary lived for about 3 years after, you know, the death of Jesus. And I've wondered if that was a greater suffering for her or being at the cross. You know, was it harder
right.
for her to not have, like, I think it seems like she would almost rather be with him in any way, you know, no matter how difficult it was for her to watch, than to be without him. And of course, Mary was never without him, you know, because
right.
just of the intimacy that she had. And, but yeah, I think that's, you know, like, that's love.
Right.
It's just a love that I don't even understand.
Right.
You know, just for every moment to be agony because you desire something
mm-hmm.
in such a good way.
Right. Yeah, yeah. In such a
good way. And that's the thing is that,
in
like,
I can
understand those feelings in a disordered way,
mm-hmm.
you know, where, like, I have vices and I'm addictions or, you know, whatever. I can understand that. But without those, it kind of befuddles me a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway. So the other things, Thomas Aquinas, he has a couple more points. He
Good.
Says that being established in his heavenly seat as God and Lord, just like that's on his part, one of the reasons why it's the cause of our salvation. And then the other one, which I thought was kind of strange that he mentioned, was that he might send down gifts upon men. And that's one of the reasons for the ascension being the cause of our salvation.
You think it means like the Holy Spirit?
Yeah, I think so. And I think just other things, you know,
sure, grace.
As that, I mean, I think a lot of them come back to his role as
the mediator
and mm-hmm. our intercessor, just that he prays for us. And, you know, now up in heaven sends us things. I mean, I don't know. It seems like he could have given us things when he was here on earth too. I mean, I think he did,
mm-hmm.
but you know, I just thought that was kind of an interesting, he lists it last. So maybe it's the least important. I don't know if he rolls that way, but that's what I would do. If you're like, this is the weakest one, I'll just put it last. Hopefully you'll already be convinced the time you get to it. And you'll just go like, okay, yeah.
I get it.
Yeah, that's just one more little thing.
Mm.
So I just think that there's a lot for, a lot. It's just really opened my eyes about what this feast actually means. How important is it? And so let's celebrate it, you know, like, let's do it right. There's only a few dioceses in the country who are actually celebrating the Ascension today. Most of them move it to Sunday.
Oh, really?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So here, like, our diocese, it's moved to Sunday,
mm-hmm.
Which actually I'm okay with, because it's kind of like you get to do it twice.
Yeah.
You know, like, I like to celebrate the feasts on their actual day.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like, oh, it's again on Sunday. Woo! Let's party again. You know, it's the after party or something, you know? It's like the original after party. But he was here for 40 days, and then, like, there's 10 days until Pentecost,
mm-hmm.
when the Holy Spirit did come.
Mm-hmm.
We say it's 40 days. There's some debate among scholars of, was Jesus here for a literal 40 days, or was it just a long time? There's quite a bit of debate. Like, in Luke's gospel, he almost makes it sound like his ascension was right away. So he does something where he ends with the ascension, but then begins the book of Acts also with the ascension, which was a common literary device among Greco-Roman literature, where you would
bridge
end,
things.
Yeah, where you would end the first book with an event, and then the second book would begin with the same event from a different perspective. So it's almost like you tell it differently the second time. And typically it would be like a more expanded version, you know, when you reopen the book, the next book. And so that's one thing that Luke does. So just because it appears in the gospel that, oh, the ascension happened almost immediately, that doesn't mean that it actually happened that way, because he begins Acts in this more detailed version of how it all went down.
When I think it's interesting, like, it'd be really good to, like, I'd be very interested to know what Jesus was doing before he ascended. You know, like, what were all the things that he was doing? Because I'm sure he was doing a lot of things.
Mm-hmm. Like, he appeared to a lot of people.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And so it's like, you know, and he ate, you know, like, that was the first thing he did up in the upper room, was he asked for bread.
Yeah.
You know, and then, like, you know, they were on the boat and they saw him on the shore and he was cooking fish. You know, so it's like, we were talking about this at the break. It's like, was he really, like, needing the food for nourishment, even though it was his glorified, you know, he had risen? Or was it because he was just proving to them, like, I'm not a ghost, I'm a real man, you know, I've truly resurrected?
Yeah. Yeah, so I think it's the latter, that I think it was more a symbol than like, hey, I'm starving. You guys got anything to eat around here? You know, I think it was just like he said to Thomas, put your finger in my side, put your hand in my side, put your finger in the holes in my hands. Like, here I am. I want to make this physical display for you so that you know I'm real. Eating something was something that would prove to the apostles, like, this isn't a mirage or an illusion. You know, like, I am really here with you. I have actually risen, and this is my body. With just a couple seconds left, one of the detail I want to mention about the ascension is that it says he took his seat at the right hand of God, and that the sitting posture symbolizes his rest from toil of his judicial power, and the right hand of God denotes his equality with the Father. So it's saying that even, you know, he brought his human nature up, but he's still equal with God, and he has finished his work.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Father Brian Ketter, for the wit beer. We talked about the binoculars. Go pick up a Viaggi candle for Mother's Day. We're on the Lord's team.
Happy Ascension, the winning side.
So raise your glass.
Cheers to Jesus.